We all want a business like Netflix or Amazon Prime. Businesses where once a customer engages with them, it becomes automatic and a part of their lifestyle from then on. But how do you build that forever transaction? I'm Robbie Kelman Baxter, and I have been studying subscription and membership models for nearly 20 years. In this podcast, my guests and I share the secrets and strategies of the membership economy. Join us for Subscription Stories, True Tales from the Trenches. Today, we're talking about sustainability. Where do the circular economy and the membership economy intersect? And how can both be applied to tread more lightly and produce less waste? These questions have been at the center of the work from my guest, Patrick Hoopscher. Patrick is a consultant, an advisor, and the host of Circularity FM, a podcast about circular business models and products as a service, or PaaS. With experience running PaaS businesses both at Bosch BSH and at Bertelsmann, as well as at his own SaaS startup, Patrick has developed some really helpful models for manufacturers building subscriptions. In our wide-ranging conversation, we talk about these models, why Europe is way ahead of the US with regard to product as a service models, and the many benefits that are driving the growth of this emerging approach. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Robbie.
So tell me a little about yourself and how you became so interested in what we're calling circular products, and particularly with a product as a service model.
Yeah, sure. So I think it kind of went back to my degrees, so my study subjects. I have a bachelor's degree in business economics, so I'm generally interested in all kinds of commercial things. And throughout this degree, I learned the important things in life won't be answered by economists or managers. So I decided to go on and study philosophy of the social sciences. And while doing that, back then in the UK, I also came across the, let's say, early fathers of liberalism and market economics. So like Adam Smith, John Locke, John Stuart Mill. And it was actually quite interesting to read their work, especially as they considered themselves more like moral philosophers and started to describe a bit the market economy. And for them, it was also quite important to think about responsibility, like social responsibility for the other people. So when we interact in a market, that there's also, you have to leave enough and as good for all the others, and there's some moral responsibility. And so this was, I mean, by now, nearly 20 years ago. And I graduated, started my career in a German corporate. And the second step was also, I afterwards founded a own software as a service startup. So this is where my as a service, let's say, career started. Back then with software, which I guess is kind of common these days, or was back then. And about 7 years ago, I joined Bosch Siemens Home Appliances as an intrapreneur, where I was supposed to build up and scale up new businesses inside the corporate on a global scale. And back then, our Dutch colleagues already started in the first few months a product as a service model, which I then took over and was in charge of that model for about 5 years, scaled it in the Netherlands and scaled it in Germany. And then, yeah, I mean, I had to get the answers to all the questions about product as a service and fell in love with the circular economy.
What product was it that was the product as a service you were incubating and scaling?
Yeah, so our focus was on home appliances. So dishwashers, fridges, coffee machines, mostly freestanding home appliances in the kitchen or wherever your washing machine stands. Yeah.
And what makes this more than, I think my listeners are probably quite familiar with as a service and potentially even product as a service, but you also brought up this idea of circular economy. Where does that fit with the dishwashers and coffee makers and washing machines?
Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, maybe let's start with the organizational goals we had when we started Blue Movement at Bosch Siemens Home Appliances. So first of all, we saw this shift in consumer preferences. So with car sharing, I mean, it all started kind of with Napster and Netflix and so on. And so the streaming or the overall access over ownership trend that started in software and then moved on to hardware. And so this was one thing that we saw customer demand for access over ownership models. And the second thing was also that we kind of foresee that, the way we operate right now in a linear economy will almost certainly lead to a situation where resources become more and more expensive for, I mean, back then, assumption was mostly because of physical scarcity. Right now, there's also the geopolitical dimension to it. But back then, the hypothesis was that in the next 15 to 20 years, we as a global manufacturer will get in trouble in some kind of resource categories. And wouldn't it be wise to own our own asset base so that we don't sell appliances anymore? At least next to selling our appliances, we also have a subscription base where we are still the owner and which we can use for harvesting spare parts and materials, raw materials itself. So this was another, let's say, more visionary motivation to start this model back then. And I think on a broader scale, so coming back to your question about where's this overlap between as a service and circularity? I mean, circularity is about reducing resource consumption, especially virgin resource consumption, and avoiding waste, to some degree also facilitating a regenerative economy. And the promise that is kind of connected to product as a service is that if you do that wisely, you can serve your customers in a way that they enjoy the benefits of the product without owning it. And you can keep resources longer in the loop and therefore reduce your resource footprint. And if I may add, so also a bit, let's say, about my background, as I said, I fell in love with the circular economy, and this also led me to start a podcast on circular business models. Then I dig deeper into that subject. And also last year, I run a series, 16 episodes on product as a service only to explore this field a bit more. So say my background and perspective on that topic is a bit wider than just the use case I've been in charge of for 5 years.
So you moved from being the leader of a particular, I mean, I think this is true of many subject matter experts and thought leaders. There's a group that come out of academia, right? And they choose a topic for their research to study and to teach. But for a lot of us, we started in the trenches working on a particular business model, maybe working at two or three different companies, looking for patterns, looking for best practices, trying to understand principles. You've done a lot of this in a more deliberate fashion, going straight from leading a business to studying it, having the podcast, interviewing a bunch of different people, coming at this from different angles. I assume this allows your philosophical side to really kind of embrace the ethical component of this, while at the same time getting a broader appreciation for what drives these different organizations as they move to product as a service. And I want to ask you, you don't have to name names, but do you find that all of the product as a service organizations are motivated by conserving resources, particularly virgin resources, and kind of the ethics of treading lightly? Or are some of them coming at it from a purely financial or customer-centric angle, finding themselves sort of accidental circularists?
Yeah, so I think, first of all, we don't even have to look at multiple or other organizations. Even in a medium-sized company, you always find different people with different motivations. Yeah. So if you ask the CFO, you probably need to talk about recurring revenue and assets and commercial possibilities. Yeah. Whereas if you talk to the CMO, maybe sustainability will be more important. Nevertheless, at the end, or in the end here, it's also most important to talk about customer value. Don't get me wrong. So I love product as a service and the circular one because it's so complex in that sense. It has the dimensions you mentioned. So it has the commercial dimension, the resource dimension. It does have the transformative dimension, especially if we look at an organization that's coming from a linear economy or like a traditional one-time sales background. So this is what I mostly like about the as a service, and the listeners know much more about the complexities of cohort analysis and so on and so forth. So this is what also drives me to look deeper into that topic. And yeah, I think motivation-wise, it's a mixed bag. I would even go so far and say the sustainable motivation would be the worst motivation to start that model, because it has to solve a customer problem in a way that is superior to the previous one-time sale or non-subscription or non-product as a service fashion. So if you don't secure that on a commercial value proposition layer, everything else won't matter anymore.
We've had several product as a service guests on the podcast. We've talked about computers as a service. We've talked about trucks, fleet management, fleets as a service. Had a product at Whoop, which is wearables for fitness management, where you subscribe to everything, including the hardware. And of course, HP, which is one of the very early entries into this space and kind of an early adopter and experimenter in this model. If somebody's listening right now and they work at a manufacturer and they're thinking about product as a service, especially driven by, as you pointed out, the political environment, we're in the middle of 2025. What guidance would you have for them about where to start and what best practices to keep in mind as they begin to launch their experiments?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is to start with the customer. So for me, product as a service itself doesn't have any special value. Yeah, it's just some kind of sales strategy, if we want to be, let's say, humble or keep it precise.
Yeah. It's packaging, right?
Yeah, and yeah. It needs to solve a customer problem in a better way than any other problem. So this is the first thing. So, and there are some indicators that that might be the case. So first of all, your product might be service heavy already. You already provide service contracts, or some of your customers provide service contracts to their customers. Yeah. So you might need to provide spare parts. And another reason is also, or indicator is that the price of your product is rather high. And for your customers, it's maintenance heavy, which kind of links to the service I mentioned at the beginning. So there are some indicators that give you already a bit of a direction. And this is like a good way to start if you want to look into that.
What are some of the risks? You've seen a lot of businesses experiment with product as a service. You've seen some successes. I'm sure you've seen some failures or maybe just some bumps in the road. What are the mistakes that you see these teams make early on?
I can't stress it enough. First of all, one of probably the biggest mistake is that people fell in love with product as a service as a concept and want to make it work no matter what. So because it's trendy or the competition is doing it. So, and they kind of ignore customer signals. So this is probably one of the most popular mistake. And why is it a mistake? Because it makes you blind to alternatives. So sometimes a service warranty might be a better proposition, or a take-back scheme, or working together with another partner who's closer to some end customers or so. So if you really then see these signals but want to stick to product as a service because we have to do product as a service, this is like a prominent mistake. Another one is kind of visible at the end through the narrative, where many people then say, yeah, you know, it's not working because customers prefer to own the product, machine, whatever it is. However, I feel this is kind of an excuse covering the deeper reason that the product as a service proposition itself is not attractive enough to the customer. And that does not necessarily mean that, let's say, it's possible or the team did a bad job. Sometimes if you, I mean, let's take a pencil, for example, it's kind of a consumable, it's low price, and it would be pretty hard to offer a pencil as a service. So it's not the fault of the team, so to say. But what I'm saying is in other segments, it's about the making the value proposition work. And if it doesn't work, the reason is not because people want to own. The reason is it's just commercially not attractive enough. And just maybe one more example to make that clear. What I normally also start some conversations with skeptics is, how many of us do own a plane? almost nobody owns a plane. Why don't we own a plane? Because their product is a service offers out there. I can buy a ticket. I can, so to say, subscribe for a limited time to the benefits of a plane, including all the service around. And it wouldn't make any sense for me if I want to fly 2 times, 5 times a year to buy a plane and do a pilot license and all what is needed to do so. So as a service itself works if it's commercially attractive. And there are cases where it's not working, but it's not so much the preference of the customer. It says, I want to own. So this is something that is not the deeper reason behind.
Yeah, you brought up a couple of, I think, really important points. One of them is to follow the customer and what they want, but also to recognize that there are certain products and categories where the basic values of product as a service just don't make sense. You gave the example of the pencil, right? And I want to take that example a little bit further and think about, because you brought up a good point, which is you start with the goals of the company, right? Are you doing this for reasons around sustainability? Are you doing this for reasons around building a deeper ongoing relationship with the customer? Are you doing this because you're concerned about accessing your materials in an increasingly difficult and complex global environment? And depending on what your goals are, you might come up with a very different model that solves the problem better. And I think that's important. Like you, I've run into many entrepreneurs, many CEOs who have the tail wagging the dog. They show up to me, they say, we need some subscription revenue because it has a higher valuation in the public markets, because it'll allow us to get our funding round done, because our peers are doing it. And sometimes you take a hard look at it. You know, I love subscriptions. And sometimes I think it doesn't make sense because it's not an ongoing problem, or because the variability of what people need is at such a high level and has such high variable costs. You don't want to charge two people the same amount when one person's going to have much higher need and so on. So I appreciate that. And I'm interested, are there certain businesses or certain attributes? Like I always say, if you don't expect to see that customer ever again, and you're only going to sell to them once, you don't need a subscription. Also, if you have some kind of legal or regulatory protection, you have a patent, there's a regulation that's in your favor, maybe you don't need to invest in subscription because you're the only game in town. Those are wedding dress subscriptions, probably never going to be popular. If you're the last gas station before you get on the superhighway, who cares if your bathrooms are dirty and you don't have a subscription? You may never see that person again, right? If they need to stop, they need to stop. So what are some of those examples that we might not think of where you'd say, I don't know if I'd go into product as a service, even to achieve a goal around a more sustainable product strategy?
I think, first of all, it's about the durability of the product. So if you want to run product as a service in a profitable way, you need durable products that ideally see multiple customers. And you need to make sure that this is the case in terms of product design. And you also need to make sure that you have use cases on the customer side that allow that. So to give you an example, one of the successful models is a bike club from the UK, being also active in multiple other countries. And they rent out kids' bicycles, where everyone knows, and it's kind of obvious, that if you provide a bicycle to a 5-year-old girl, she won't use it for 5 years. And at the same time, this bicycle itself will probably be able to serve also, will be used by other girls or boys. So it needs to be durable, and ideally it serves multiple customers. Another aspect is the price point. So if it's just too cheap, people will just buy it. So that kind of relates back to the example of the plane. So typically a plane is not cheap. If it was cheap, probably more people would own a plane. And kind of, I mean, stating the obvious, but it's easy to forget the maintenance level. So this directly relates to the service aspect. If your product doesn't require any service, it's hard to offer it as a service. So let me take an example from Blue Movement here. If you compare a coffee machine with a fridge, what's the fridge doing? You can easily tell from the outside. It needs to be plugged into a socket and it needs electricity. Whereas if you have a fully automated coffee machine, it needs electricity, water, milk, and coffee, and many things can go wrong. It's one of the most complex products we manufactured. And yeah, it's maintenance heavy. You have preferences about milk and coffee and taste and so on and so forth. And people go crazy about the certain aspects there. Although it's the same industry, it might even be the same customers. For some, the fridge, people say, well, I mean, I just buy this fridge. Why should I use it as a service? And even if I just need it for 2 or 3 years, maybe as an expert, it might be easier just to buy it and then sell it secondhand. Whereas for a coffee machine, especially one of the more premium ones, things can go wrong. You need a repair. You need certain supplements to clean it, descale it, and so on and so forth. So the level of maintenance is kind of important. So yeah, I think these are 3-4 main criteria to look at if you want to start something like that.
Yeah. So cost, maintenance, complexity. What am I missing?
I did a product as a service wheel with 14 criteria. Happy to link it from the show notes just to highlight 2-3 more. Another aspect is logistics. So especially if you're running a model where you need to send products back and forth quite frequently, it does make a difference if you just have normal parcel shipments or if you need a truck to deliver something. Again, let's take the fridge subscription and compare it with a smartphone subscription. Both might come at 1,000 euros or dollars retail price, but the logistics costs to ship it across the country differ tremendously. For the smartphone, it might be $5 to $10, whereas for a fridge, it's much more. It's between 100 and 200 euros, at least here in continental Europe. And if you then put that into relation of the retail or production price, logistics can eat up a high share of your cost basis. And then if you're running into a model where you need frequent logistics, so this is another aspect.
So a small item easier than a large item. It's interesting. There's so much detail and nuance to figuring this out. It's really not easy. So Europe is way ahead of the United States, and I'm guessing maybe the rest of the world with regard to products as a service. Do you agree with that? And if so, what's going on that's different?
Yeah, it's a bit hard to say, to be honest, because with my background in philosophy, I sometimes try to only make the statements I can back up, and I didn't do a full analysis of product service in the world. However, to keep it practical, I do think there are two reasons that work in favor of product as a service. So the first one is, I guess, a bit of a strong industrial base. So, I mean, we didn't really talk about product as a service in the B2B environment, but this is something where it kind of makes sense. I mean, we know these cases about Rolls-Royce or
Rolls-Royce Power by the Hour.
Power by the Hour. About. Yeah. We have some more examples here, Lightning as a Service. There's actually, I mean, this is not Europe, but there's cooling as a service as another B2B example from Asia Pacific. And yeah, but coming back to that, so Europe does have in many areas a strong industrial base. And yeah, I mean, it doesn't stop with providing the, let's say, the product itself and the machine. You need to have a service contract. You need to repair that. You need to provide uptime and so on. So this is something that works in favor. And another one is probably that in Europe, there might be more people who also want to start it for environmental reasons, let's say for reasons of resource consumption, and really try to make it work. I mean, the cool and obvious thing is if you can save resources, you can also save money. So this is just to a small degree, it is a environmental case, because if you save resources, if you can use a product longer and can provide it to multiple customers, this can turn into a pretty attractive model as subscriptions in general, if it works.
It's something that I think about. I tend to be quite US-centric. I live on the West Coast of the United States, and those are the businesses that I read about the most and hear about the most. But your point also about philosophy and attitudes toward sustainability and toward what's best for the community versus what's best for the individual, I don't want to put words in your mouth, especially without data and the ability to support what you're saying, but it does feel that different countries sort of come at this from different perspectives. and a different, I mean, honestly, different customer base. And while I know that there are many groups in the United States that are very focused on the environment, on climate change, there's also groups that are focused on cost savings and variety and flexibility and cash flow management. There's a lot of different reasons that someone shows up for product as a service.
If I just may add and connect it to the previous question was about the motivation, and because what you just said is probably just one more argument to try it out in an existing organization. And as we all know, change and innovation in an existing organization is per default difficult, and you need a bit of an internal lobby to support new projects, especially if they go against the core business, so to say. And therefore, yeah, you need the reasons from the customer side, you need the reasons from the commercial side. And if you also have reasons from the environmental side, yeah, that might make a difference here and there to start it or try it out for longer and stick to it. Just to emphasize again, I think product as a service can have a positive benefit, but also to be clear here, there are many examples out there that are not done for the environment. There are also many examples, a few examples out there that are most certainly, let's say, harming the environment in a way that they drive additional consumption through rebound effects. So product as a service itself, say, doesn't care about the environment. It's a bit the way we implement it. And maybe in certain settings, it doesn't work. And even if you want to answer this question, you first need to come up with a proposition design that is superior in terms of making the customer happy, as we said at the beginning already.
You said a rebound effect. What does that mean? And maybe can you provide an example?
Yeah, the rebound effect, this is a economic term not limited to product as a service or subscriptions. It's basically the idea that the intention you had is not backed up by the actual result and the consumption behavior is kind of firing back. So the classical example is the automotive engine. So I don't know, 40 years ago, our engines were less efficient than they are right now. And you could have thought, and the narrative back then was also, yeah, let's make the engines more efficient and let's use less fuel per 100 kilometers. So we can save fuel. Yeah, the engine developed in that direction, but the cars just got bigger and we had more mobility. And ultimately, we just use more fuel and have more cars with more resources instead of keeping the size of the cars as they have been 30 or 40 years ago and kind of reducing the resource consumption. So this is a bit where the rebound effect is coming from. And if we transfer that to product as a service, is that it could also be that a certain service does make products more accessible to consumer groups that have not been able to use these kind of products before. And you're carving out more sustainable ways of consumption, or maybe even certain ways of, some customers would never have used a certain product because it is too expensive or it doesn't make sense. But now with as a service, they can afford it. And in total, you have a higher resource consumption because of the product as a service model.
I'm sure there are businesses that came to as a service, particularly to solve a customer problem or for a recurring revenue related internal goal, where the outcome is still more sustainable solution. And then there are also cases where you're trying to make it more sustainable and you find that you're actually going in the other direction. It really takes a lot of focus on what the primary goal is. And I would imagine that one of the challenges that you see is which of the goals, I mean, I can't tell you how often I have clients who say, if I say to them, are you doing this to reach more customers? Are you doing this to acquire new segments? Are you doing this to have a deeper relationship that drives higher lifetime value? Are you doing this for environmental reasons? And it's very hard to optimize for multiple variables.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, let's not forget that product as a service is just a sales model, but the implications and the requirements to run it successfully keep a complete organization busy. And it's pretty easy to get distracted you need different ways of accounting, you need most likely new IT tools, you will need to handle reverse logistics, you need to adapt your marketing and storytelling, and so on and so forth. And yeah, you need to make sure that the senior management understands it. And if it gets bigger and you grow your capex on your balance sheet, you need to have your investors on board as well, or you need to find solutions to get that off your balance sheet. It's a complex, beautiful opportunity and easy to get lost.
Easy to get lost. So I'm loving this conversation. I have lots more questions, but I know we're coming to the end of our time, at least for this conversation. I'm wondering, do you have a minute for a speed round?
Sure.
Okay. The first subscription you ever had?
Almost certainly a newspaper subscription.
Your favorite subscription right now?
The On Running Shoes.
And what's the subscription for?
So these are running shoes I do not own, but I use them as a service. They're made of bio-based material. Once I feel I can't use them anymore, I send them back. They get recycled and there will be new shoes made of these shoes specifically. And I get a new pair and I don't own them again. I pay a monthly subscription.
Perfect. We actually had a guest early on the podcast that talked about the Nike Adventure Club, which was a very similar model, but for children's shoes. So yeah, that's a great one. The philosopher who's been most influential in your professional work?
Adam Smith.
And the most relevant episode of the Circular FM podcast that you host for subscription professionals?
The conversation with Mylene Chappé, formerly from Acer, who also showed up in your show. And in this conversation, I wrap up the 15 conversation before about product as a service.
Awesome. Patrick Hoopscher, thank you so much for being a guest on Subscription Stories.
Thanks for having me, Robbie.
That was Patrick Hoopscher, circular business strategist, product as a service expert, and podcast host of Circularity FM. For more about Patrick, go to hoopscher.com. And for more about Subscription Stories, as well as a transcript of my conversation with Patrick, go to robbiekelmanbaxter.com/podcast. Also, I have a favor to ask. If you like what you heard, please take a minute to go over to Apple Podcasts or Apple iTunes, leave a review. Mention Patrick in this episode if you especially enjoyed it. Reviews are how listeners find our podcast, and we appreciate each one. Thanks for your support. And thanks for listening to Subscription Stories.